MMA Roadshow, episode number 423. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me, and in fact, nobody is with me. I'm all alone here in my hotel room. Now listen, I had somebody lined up that was going to help me out, help break down one championship here in Denver. But I'm not going to put them on blast. They're standing me up, but for a very good reason, they got work to do. So I thought I was going to be able to pull somebody away, but they're still busy filing stories for their place of employment, which is the place they're making money, not volunteering their time here just talking to me. So for that reason, I will certainly be not blaming them one bit and understand that they got a job to do. But I, of course, am here in Denver, Colorado, site of One Fight Night 10, the very first show for One Championship in the United States. Of course, they've had that deal with Amazon for quite a while, so they've been broadcasting here in North America in the U.S. and Canada on Amazon, which I think has been a good deal for them. Seems like everybody's happy with the partnership as far as what we're hearing. Talks of maybe even expanding the partnership a little bit. Now, what does that mean, expanding to more markets? Does it mean expanding the number of shows? We don't know. Chatry was keeping that a little bit close to the hip. Chatry Sitchitong, of course, the One Championship CEO. So what does that mean? What does that look like? Who knows? But it seems like it's a good deal. I mean, man, look, live sports mean something. You know what I mean? It's been streaming deals right now are big. So big opportunities for them. But here's a chance to be in the United States, do the show in the United States, you know, get some of the local media coverage and get some people looking at it. And I think it's going to be good for him. You know, there's a cool tie-in, I guess, that it's in Denver, the same place that the UFC held their first event. You know, just kind of a cool, I guess, coincidence, I would say, more than anything. I mean, 30 years later, here you are starting a new phase of your career in the same place that One started. Really, that was not the reason for doing it. I don't think the One Championship cared too much about comparisons to the UFC or any kind of link like that. It's just more that the Colorado Commission was the one that was willing to adapt the rule set, right? I mean, you got the knees to the head of the grounding opponents. You got some different scoring criteria, you know, where you score fights as a whole. There's different things going on. And of course, you got Muay Thai and small gloves. I mean, so you got multiple rule sets that you got to adapt. You got the weight cutting thing, you know, the weight class, how they do everything. So Colorado was the one that was going to say, yeah, let's do it. We'll do that. So that'll be something to monitor because, look, it's going to be Colorado's first time, you know, overseeing this rule set and overseeing an event that's utilizing this fashion. So we'll see how that all plays out. But that I believe is, you know, why they're here more than anything. Like, hey, let's have some cool parallel to the UFC. It is at the First Bank Center, I believe it's called now, in Broomfield, Colorado. So we are downtown here in Denver. And all the media activities have been down here in the downtown area, which I think is smart. You know, the press conference, you know, all the different things, the workouts, all the things they've done, you know, have that in the more populated area of the city because Broomfield is out in the suburbs a little bit. The UFC's actually run a couple of events there. Not the biggest arena, but, I think that's smart. I mean, the UFC has done fight nights there, and I think it's good, man. If you can, you know, have a small building but just make sure it's full, you know, sometimes that can be better than, you know, trying to book a big arena and then finding out, ticket sales were a little tougher than we thought, especially when you're coming to market for the first time. So, you know, anxious to see the whole setup and how they do it. If you've never seen a One Championship event, obviously they do big over-the-top production. So I think it'll be cool to see. It's a really good card. Cole Coffey, of course, is not with me. He is back in Las Vegas. He did not make the trip out to Newark, New Jersey, but he was working all day, and so we'll have him check in a little bit just for the things he saw. Because I'll be honest with you, I have not seen anything from the UFC whatsoever. I was busy working on Media Day, press conference, all the other stuff I had here, so I didn't get a chance at all to go to check out anything. In fact, after I get done recording this, I'll probably start checking out some of the videos and kind of seeing what's going on. But I'm pumped up for the card, man. I'm really pumped up for UFC 288. Took a hit on the main card with the loss of Bryce Mitchell. And, you know, I've seen some people saying, I don't know about this lineup, but I think this is a lineup for the hardcores, man. I really do. I like it. I mean, you got the main event, of course, to me is incredibly intriguing. You got Aljamain Sterling versus Henry Cejudo. You know, kind of a little cringy build-up. They like to talk. They like to go back and forth with each other. But, you know, it's this return of Henry Cejudo. And it's crazy, man. You know, and I think it was Luke Thomas threw out that stat that UFC title fights with guys over the age of 35, they're like 2-28. That's crazy. I mean, that is a significant statistic and a significant sample size. You know what I mean? If it was like, oh, they're 1-3, so they only win 25% of the time. You're like, yeah, but that's only 4 fights. You're talking about that many fights? And oh, by the way, the 2 wins came from the same guy in Tyron Woodley? Like, that tells you something, man. And I was kind of leaning Aljamain Sterling anyway, man. But, you know, that statistic really just kind of hammers home. Now, I like Aljamain Sterling because I think, you know, stylistically the way they match up, the size that he brings in there, big. I mean, huge size difference. I know Cejudo's used to fighting bigger guys, so, you know, maybe he's prepared for that. But I think the size difference is a big thing here. And then I think about just the games, you know what I mean? Like the styles that they bring to the table. And Aljamain Sterling, man, I love his grappling ability, and I think he's going to be able to deal with Henry Cejudo, who gets those takedowns. But I think in this one, it's probably going to be best served to try to keep this on the feet, at which point that range distance comes back an issue again. So I like it. Now, I was talking with my co-host, Eric McMahon, on Cage Side with John Morgan earlier this week, and he's actually leaning Henry Cejudo. And I get it, man. I understand the case he made. He talked about the scrambling ability that Henry Cejudo has. You know, obviously as an Olympic gold medalist wrestler, he's got this ability to scramble out of situations, so he doesn't necessarily believe that Aljamain's going to be able to get to those dominating grappling positions. So it all lays out very interestingly. Of course, the time away is big. You know, normally somebody stepping back after 3 years into a role like this, you would say, well, they can't replicate that. You know, they're not good. But, you know, I feel like Henry Cejudo's layoff wasn't really a layoff. Now, he's just so involved in training and working with his team and teaching other people. And he's hands-on, right? He's out there, like, actually. Now, he's not getting – or at least I don't think that he was, like, sparring along the way for 3 years. But he's still in there drilling, and he's still in there keeping his mind sharp. I mean, you see his breakdowns, and you see just how much technical savvy he has and knowledge of the game, man. It's really impressive. Normally where I would factor in that 3-year layoff a lot more, I tend not to as much, but you can't ignore it. Not fighting in a live scenario for 3 years, man. That's a big deal, especially against a champion who is getting better, who seems to be performing at their highest level ever. I mean, it means something. So I'm intrigued by this, man. It's a coin flip to me. It really is a coin flip to me, man. I can see a case for both guys winning. I think I'm leaning Aljamain Sterling, but I'm not saying that with a huge degree of certainty, you know. You just can't, I think, with two guys this good. So anyway, I'm anxious to see what everybody had to say and all the stuff that's coming out of Jersey. And we'll get Cole Coffey to weigh in on just some of the things he saw and his thoughts on these fights as well. I'm going to be in a unique scenario, actually, because on Saturday I will be in Canada. I will be on the mic in Windsor, I believe, is where we're going. I should probably figure out where I'm going, huh? I mean, I got a plane ticket and all that, but Windsor, Nova Scotia, Canada. So the last two events that I did for Fight League Atlantic have been in Moncton. This is a new place. I think this is the first time they've ever actually been to this venue. So I'm excited to see it and flying into Halifax. And my man Chris Caladius is going to show me around Halifax a little bit, and then we'll head out to Windsor to call Fight League Atlantic 9. So we'll be on the mic for that. Looking forward to it. Great crew out there in Canada, man. They're doing some big things out there on the Eastern Seaboard. I'm going to try to have these prelims on my phone or something like that so I can keep track. But I think the good thing is, because we're an hour ahead out there, I should make sure that province is. I'm pretty sure it's on Atlantic time zone, too. Moncton was, so I'm pretty sure this is, too, where it's actually 1 hour ahead of Eastern. So hopefully we'll wrap up before the main event, and I can really give my full attention to that and then sit down and do a half episode as well after I've had a chance to review everything. So shout out to everybody over at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. Appreciate all the love and support over there. So that's gonna be my Saturday. I'll be doubling up on events. I'll be on the mic and then watching that as well. So but on Friday, I've been here for one championship all week long. Intrigued today, the press conference went down, the open workouts went down. Tomorrow will be the weigh-ins in the morning. Now, I'm in a unique situation right here in that I'm on the 22nd floor of the Host Hotel, which is an absolutely really nice hotel. It's actually like the Hyatt Place, I think is what it's called. But I'm sitting here in my room. I didn't even get an upgrade. And I got like a nice room with a sitting area, like a whole couch and footrest and ottoman, I guess you'd call it. You know, it's a nice, nice room, dude. But the elevator's not working right now. So I'm on the top floor of this place, and the elevator is not working now. For me, that's not going to be the greatest of fun when I go grab some dinner here in a little bit. I'm hoping it's working by then. But for the fighters, you know, I was kind of thinking about this. I think the fighters still cut weight to a degree here in one. I mean, I know the idea is to get rid of weight cutting, but I'm sure everybody's still cutting a little bit, right? I mean, they got to kind of just finesse the weight down to exactly where they got to be. Obviously, they got to do the hydration. This is my first time watching that all. I've seen the streams. I mean, appreciate them. I know a lot of people were like, where's the transparency? And they started streaming it. But, you know, it's a lot different actually being in the room, and you can kind of see what's not on camera and how people are acting and what's going. So I'm excited to see the whole thing. In person, I guess. I know Alex Davis, my good friend Alex Davis, he's a big proponent of it. Like, he thinks it is the fix. I know there was a video that came out, the On Point MMA guys, I believe, where they just kind of totally blasted it and said it can be cheated. Unfortunately, I think every system can be cheated. There's just nothing perfect, and that's for anything. You know what I mean? I have yet, in all my years of being in this business, I have yet to hear the perfect solution for how you fix weight cutting or how you address weight cutting. So, anyway, I'm anxious to see that up close. But it did make me think, right? Would people be absolutely panicking if they had, like, severe weight cuts and big weight cuts and they weren't able to get back and forth to the – I mean, like, I guess if you're cutting weight, you know, chasing the stairs is not a bad thing, right? I mean, it gets your workout in, help you cut some calories. But, you know, if you happen to be in kind of a weakened state or whatever and you got to walk up or down, like, 15 flights of stairs – I can't imagine that would be fun if you were in a state of a big, big weight cut. You know, some of these guys that are just in really bad shape. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I don't know. I'm hoping to get the elevators working soon because I'm not really feeling 22 flights down and 22 flights up. But, I mean, let's be honest. I could use the steps. I could use the steps. But it did make me think, hey, man, you know, this is obviously not the scenario that ONE Championship was looking for and what they were thinking of when they got rid of weight cutting. But you do think you have some fighters that are panicking a lot less. So, listen, this ONE Championship event, Broomfield, Colorado. It's a little suburban area. Everything's been kind of downtown here so far this week. The press conference was good. Big, man. They had, like, the whole card at the press conference, which they want to do everything big, right? I mean, this is a big moment for ONE Championship. This is their big opportunity to make a huge statement on the U.S. scene. You know, that broadcast deal, as you said, it's been good. It's been in place for a while. But this is the moment where you're on the ground and you're getting coverage up close and you know, maybe you're exposed to new fans. I mean, there were a decent amount of fans at the press conference today that were excited to see people there. And, you know, it's their chance to see the product for the first time. And, you know, maybe it's like that hipster fan, you know, oh, I like the UFC, but you know what I really like? I like ONE Championship. Now, I love ONE. I really do like what ONE Championship is doing. I think we've talked about it before, but now that I'm here, you know, covering it, going to a little bit deeper, but what they've done in adding submission grappling and adding Muay Thai and 4-ounce gloves and adding kickboxing, it's really opened up the number of athletes that they can chase after. And they've got some great MMA talent. Obviously, Demetrius Johnson versus Adriano Moraes. I mean, Demetrius, a lot of people, you know, the GOAT. He's definitely in the GOAT discussion. I still lean John Jones, but you can't have a discussion of the greatest of all time and not have Demetrius Johnson in the conversation. So that's, you know, that's upper level. And Adriano Moraes, I don't think necessarily has gotten the respect. Crazy thing, this is his first time competing in the United States as well. I mean, he's lived and trained here for quite, at least I know he trains here. I don't know if he just comes out for camp. I think he lives in Florida at American Top Team. So, I mean, he's been in the rankings forever. I mean, they took back the MMA junkie rankings that we used to do. You know, that's everything. It's not just the organization. It's you know, all the talent in the world. He's there forever, man. The dude's been performing. So, they, you know, they've got some names. You know, Sage Northcutt is back. Really excited for that. You know, man, I had a chance to interview him and just, you know, what he's gone through, man, and 4 years away and battling his way back. I'm excited for that. So they have some elite martial artists. They have mixed martial artists. They have some top talent. And, you know, they're going to try to steal some free agents here every now and then. I know the Francis Ngannou thing didn't work out so well. A little bit surprised that Chatri Sichijong went out of his way to kind of poke at Francis Ngannou a little bit, I think. I think basically he was just trying to get out ahead of the news and kind of control the narrative, which I get it. Everybody tries to do that. They're like, hey, if I make my statement first, and that's the statement that's on record first. But I think it's one of those situations where it would have been better served not to say anything, man, just to kind of leave it alone, you know what I mean? But whatever, it happened. I guess those are lessons that Kshatri Suchitong will learn along the ways, you know, especially as they get maybe more media coverage here in the United States. But, you know, you've got the greatest of the great in Muay Thai kickboxing submission grappling. I mean, you literally have the best grapplers on the planet. You literally have the best strikers on the planet. And you're not all just chasing after the same names in the MMA world. I mean, you're still trying to get some free agents, of course, but you're not doing just that, you know. And I think that was where they were stuck for a long time. It was like, you know, you got good things. You know, you got like Eddie Alvarez to come over, who's always been smart and really, I don't care where I fight. Wherever pays me the most money, I'll go fight. You know what I mean? So you got Eddie Alvarez to come over. But I think it was just tough to get people to really buy into it. You know, Demetrius was a perfect addition because he wanted to fight over there. And, of course, he, you know, trained by Matt Hume, who has big connections with the company. So it all made sense. But he wanted to go do that. But I think it was hard to attract top-level free agents because they weren't competing in the United States. And you did, let's be honest, until this Amazon deal, it was tough, man. You know, you kind of disappeared a little bit because the fights were on like Friday at 5 a.m. in the morning, and like nobody's getting up to watch that. And again, the whole thing is live sports. People love live sports, and so they're not going back and watching it either. So I think it was a little tough. Now, you know, this new deal opens up an opportunity for a lot of people to take a look at. You know, they're being broadcast in prime time in the United States. Now they're going to host events in the United States. So I think this is a big opportunity for them. And we'll see how it goes. You know, not a huge arena, but sometimes, you know, it's better to have a small arena that's packed than to have a big, big building that you find out it's more difficult to sell tickets than you thought. So we'll see how the building looks on Friday night. But the show's good. If you haven't seen the show, One Championship, man, their shows are over the top, man. They're fantastic. So they do big production, man. It's you know, very reminiscent of Pride era type production. So no more Michael Chiavello. I'm not sure exactly what all happened there. No, Michael Chiavello, I've always considered Michael Chiavello a friend, man. He's always been very, very good to me. I'd run into him every now and then at airports, which is crazy. We crossed each other at the LAX airport a couple times. But I know he's a free agent, not working with the company anymore. I'm not sure if that was an Amazon Prime decision. I'm not sure if that was a One Championship decision. But I know he's out there kind of touting being a free agent. I know for some people, they're like, he's too over the top, man. But the dude definitely brings the energy, man. He definitely keeps it exciting. So hate to see that kind of as they're going in this era that Chiavello's no longer with the company. But I don't know exactly what happened behind closed doors. I don't know if we'll ever hear the whole story of why. It seemed like a weird direction to go in because his voice is still on a lot of promos. But, I mean, you know, the same thing happened with Mike Goldberg as well. You know, they still had his voice in a lot of video packages until, you know, Anik had been around long enough that there were all those to work with. So anyway, unfortunate for him. But overall, like I said, you've got these great, great fighters, and you've got these, you know, elite, world-class level that they're not just sharing the same talent pool that PFL, Bellator, the UFC, of course, are all going after. You know, they can kind of corner the market a little bit. Not that there's not great fighters in Glory. Not that there's, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that they're the only ones in those games, but they are one of the biggest in the games. You know what I mean? And now they're doing this weekly show in Thailand, which the Muay Thai and 4-ounce gloves, man. It's I dig it, man. I dig it. I got to go to Thailand this summer. I've never been to Thailand, and Muay Thai is the roundabout thing that got me into mixed martial arts, as I said before. So, how big is this moment? That's the key. Like, I what I'm interested to see. So I asked Kshatri Suchitong today where the U.S. factors in moving forward. Because listen, man, I think it's one thing we forget over here when we talk about how big an organization is. And I know Kshatri gets, you know, critiqued all the time for, you know, because they make these claims. Oh, there's 7 billion, but you know, we're streaming to 7 billion people. It's like, well, that's if you're on the internet. Yeah, most anybody can get it, except if their government blocks it or whatever. So, but I mean, this is, you know, I do believe this is a big one. The United States isn't the only place to be successful. I mean, if you're the biggest mixed martial arts organization in 75 countries around the world, I mean, that's big, you know what I mean? Like, but the big time, the big blue chip money, the sponsors, the revenue, like, that's all here, and you got to carve out some space here. So, you know, how big is this moment? I'm interested to see. I think it, you know, this to me, I don't think we know for sure. Oh, like, you know, on Saturday morning, we go, yep, one championship is going to make it. Or, man, I guess they're going to have to pack it up because they really just don't have anything in the can. Like, no, I don't think we're going to know that. But it's a big moment for the organization. Man, look at what BKFC did, right? They had this huge pay-per-view, and they had a great weekend where they were the biggest thing. Now, one doesn't have that. There's a UFC pay-per-view. But at least it's not the same night. So at least they do get a little bit of their space, right? But even for BKFC, right, I think a lot of people are tuning in. And they're like, oh, wait a minute. Might have to check out this bare knuckle thing, man. You know, I watched a little bit of it, and they made some fans out of me. But now you got to come back and do it again, right? Now you got to get their attention again. And I think that's the same thing here. Even if this is a home run, you got to keep it going. And even if it's not a home run, you still got to keep it going there too. So I don't think this is like the make or break moment. This is the moment we find out the future of one championship. I don't think it's that. But I do think it's big. I do think it's big. I think they need to have a good card. I think they need to kind of generate some buzz. And then they need to have what is their long-term strategy here in the United States. Like I said, I asked Chatry about it today, and he said, listen, the U.S. market is important to us. And, you know, you're going to hear some news, especially next year. And we want to take the U.S. market by storm. You know, we're looking at expanding the partnership with Amazon Prime. Now, what does that mean as far as expanding? Does that mean, you know, does it mean that they're doing it? Because to my understanding, I believe the Prime Video deal is only the U.S. and Canada. Now, I'll express my ignorance here. I don't know how big Amazon is everywhere else in the world, but I've ordered Amazon in Abu Dhabi. I've ordered Amazon in the UK. You know what I mean? I assume it's as prevalent. I mean, given the valuation of the company, but I don't know if like the streaming deal is that I don't know. So is it add more markets or is it, you know, add more dates? You know, you're doing this weekly show in Thailand. I mean, what if you're doing a show a month in the United States? You know, that could be massive. Then you start getting some real consistency. Then you start getting some brand awareness. So I don't think this is the end-all, be-all, one way or the other, good or bad, for one championship. But it is a big moment for them. So, you know, and again, they can be successful without capturing the U.S. market. But there's no doubt that you want to be successful in the U.S. market. So we talked a little bit about what's at the top of the list for the UFC. Of course, as we mentioned, you know, main card shakeup over the UFC. The loss of Bryce Mitchell was unfortunate. Moser Evloev. That dude is a stud. We'll see what Diego Lopez can do. Step in on short notice. Jessica Andrade, Yan Xiaonan. A couple fighters coming off some setbacks, but still a meaningful one in the strawweight division. Cron Gracie is on there against Charles Jourdain. I still think it's a good card for the hardcores. You know, the Bilal Muhammad, Gilbert Burns fight, props to those dudes for stepping up on short notice and doing a five-round fight, just trying to make a statement. You know, so I get why some people might criticize that this isn't as deep of a card, but I think it is still a good card, and I think it's kind of, a hardcore card. I was really looking forward to Bryce Mitchell and Mofsar Evloev, if I'm being honest with you. That was a terrible, terrible, unfortunate loss, but things happen, and that's what's, that's unfortunately what played out. It was weird, right, that his shoulder had that. I mean, I didn't see, like, I haven't seen anything today of the interviews, but like that purple stuff that was on his shoulder in that countdown video, or crazy. All right, so Demetrius Johnson, Adriano Moraes at the top. You don't need me to break this down. The trilogy, you know, you're tuning in for this. The trilogy fight, 1-1 apiece, man. As they joke today, you know, knees on both sides finishing the fight, which is kind of wild. But it's a big one, and Demetrius Johnson, you know, could be his last fight, man. This might be the last time we see Demetrius Johnson compete, which is wild. I'm glad he's getting to come back and fight in the United States. And he said, look, I'm going to make this decision after the fight. I haven't made the decision yet. I will make the decision after. It's going to be a business decision, you know, not that I can't compete. And I thought it was interesting. He even brought up Chad Mendes, which I thought was cool. You know, he brought up, you know, my peers, George St. Pierre, Khabib Nurmagomedov. And, you know, I thought the point was, you know, they kind of walked away at the top of the game. Like, I think he feels like, hey, I'm still there. But I thought it was cool. He even brought up Chad Mendes. He was like, Chad Mendes could be top five in the world right now, no question. And he hung it up last week at Bare Knuckle. And, of course, they had their shared history in the WC. So I thought it was cool. I've always been a Chad Mendes fan. So I thought it was cool. Demetrius kind of threw out that hashtag WEC never die reference, right? But he said it. He's like, man, if there's other things I can do to make money, then, you know, I might have to do that. It's going to be a business decision. And you know, look, I was looking at his social media accounts today. I know he's got the Twitch streaming and he's got some sponsorships, and there is something to be said for going out on top. You know, the GOAT, you can't hurt your brand, right, by rattling off seven straight losses or something like that to end your career. And people are like, I don't know, was he ever that good? I think the division was just over, you know, wasn't as good at the time. And, you know, so I think it's a real possibility. Like, I don't think he's just dangling that out there. But he did say, I haven't made the decision yet. I'll make the decision after the fight. Meanwhile, Adriano Moraes is going to be the bigger man, as we've seen in both matchups. He's going to have the size advantage in there. You know, he trains an American top team, man. He wants to do this. He's not as vocal or as well known as Demetrius Johnson, but he sees this as an opportunity, and he knows, you know, this may be a chance for him to get, you get two wins over the GOAT. Okay, maybe you call one a fluke, but I beat him 2 out of 3. Now where do I stand? So it's a big moment in his career and the first time fighting in the United States. So high-level MMA, you needed to, even if you don't like the other stuff, for some reason you don't like the other stuff, which I don't know why you wouldn't, but if for some reason you only like MMA, you know this is a fight that you don't want to miss. I mean, it's a world-class fight that no matter what organization it would take place in, would be worth watching. Co-main event, Rod Tang, Jit Mun Wong versus Edgar Tabarez. Rod Tang's a favorite here. Rod Tang should absolutely win this fight. Now, Edgar Tabarez, you know, he's a Mexican born fighter. He is, you know, a WKA, I believe, Muay Thai champion. I mean, he's not a nobody, but he just doesn't have near the experience of Rod Tang. And even today, I thought this was interesting, man. You know, somebody asked him, like, you know, I mean, Rod Tang's a legend of the sport. I mean, hopefully you've seen him compete by now. He's fun. He's exciting. He goes out there to put on a show. And he has 274 career wins, which is crazy. You know, these Thai fighters, man, that start fighting professionally when they're like 9 years old. It's amazing. It's amazing. I got to get over there this summer. So he's a legend, right? But and I understand you'd be respectful, but somebody asks, like, hey, Edgar, you know you're the underdog, but, you know, where do you think you have the advantages? And he was like, I can't say I have any advantages, but I'm going to go in there and do my best. I was like, whoa. Again, second language, so maybe, you know, he thought he was just being – and I totally understand, like, you're facing a legend like that. You want to be respectful. I mean, there's nothing wrong with being like – maybe you don't want to be respectful. Maybe you want to stir the pot. But there's nothing wrong with saying, this dude's a legend for a reason, and I know he's got incredible tools, but I'm a dangerous fighter too, you know, and I plan to go in there and show that, you know. I don't know, man. It was just, again, I don't think it came out quite the way he wanted to, but he was like, nowhere really, but I'm going to go do my best. Like, oh, okay. all right. Mikey Musumeci and Osama Alwari in the other title fight. So three titles up for grab. This is the flyweight submission grappling world championship, I should say. Mikey, legit one of the best grapplers on the planet. Like, legit one of the best grapplers around. His last fight was insane. Just destroyed a dude's leg. They absolutely refused to tap. It was hard to watch. Dude ends up tearing every ligament in his knee and is going to have, a year away, which tough, but, like, everybody's been kind of talking about that fight this week. Like, what do you think, like, tough or not smart? I think most people have been like, both, I guess, but that's why you tap, is to get out of it. So Mikey Musumeci, amazing. Osama, though, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt, of course, you know, trains with the Atos team, that trains the Rotolo brothers, Andre Galvão. And he believes, hey, I'm fully prepared for this. I've been training for this moment my whole life. Like, I'm ready to go in there and shock the world. I like submission grappling. I've heard some people say that they don't like it being in the middle of a show. Because, you know, you get a high-level MMA fight, and then you get a high-level striking fight, and then you turn to pure grappling, which we know probably doesn't appeal to the casual fan as much. But I like it. And, again, these are dangerous dudes. Obviously, you know, with these full-on pure grapplers, the leg locks are big. You know, like when we do Fury professional grappling and we have the UFC fighters, we actually ban leg locks because that's the only way the UFC will let us use the talent is if they don't have to worry about knees being popped and that sort of thing. And so it limits a little bit of what the pure grapplers can do when they do face off again, because that's just that kind of new age jiu-jitsu, right, where the leg locks are massive. So, you'll certainly see a lot of leg entanglements. Mikey's an interesting cat, man. He's a funny dude that, like, legit just eats pizza every day, which is crazy. But good on him. So, look, three titles at the top. I mean, again, I think this card was put together to be action-packed. Chatry was saying, man, he's like, I got this feeling we might have 100% submission or finish rate. I was like, well, that's tough, but I mean, it is big. And Chatry was taking some shots today, man. He was like, you know, we've got a 75% submission rate. I think the UFC is only like 38%. I mean, he called him out by name. And then he had one too that I'm kind of actually interested to know what Scott Coker thinks. Because, you know, he basically said, look, I'm the only one that's a lifelong martial artist. And I was like, he does actively train. Like, Coker doesn't train anymore that I'm aware of. Obviously, Dana, you know, I don't think Dana trains martial arts at all. I mean, I haven't heard of him training martial arts. He's clearly training he's clearly training somehow if you've seen all the images of him lately. But I don't think he does anymore. Now, he used to do, like, some jiu-jitsu and stuff. That's how he and the Fertitta brothers first got into mixed martial arts. There's the famous story about the old contract was, like, there's a dispute between them. It's a jiu-jitsu match that settles it. But I don't think he does. But I know Coker, like, trained for a long time, and I don't know. Again, I thought maybe that was a little bit of an unnecessary shot to take. It's like, I'm the only CEO of the major companies that's actually a martial artist. But in fairness, like, he did say that he was, like, this morning he trained, like, 2.5 hours on the mats with, you know, multiple-time world champions, and he was like, they absolutely destroyed me, but it was good training. So, I mean, he does have the right to be like, I'm the only active one training or something. But anyway, I thought that was kind of funny. So, maybe it will be 100% finish rate. We'll find out. Stamp Fairtex, Elise Anderson, big atom weight fight there. Stamp Fairtex, of course, a former two-sport champ. She was an MMA champ and Muay Thai champ. This is an MMA fight. Stamp is, you know, she's excited. She goes out there. She likes to put on a show. She's the one that the stamp dance. Have you ever heard Chiavello, of course, talking about that? You know, she comes out and dances, and she always looks to entertain. It was pretty cool, man, that that I didn't really know this much about Stamp. I'd seen her fights, but Chatry was taught today because it did, you know, in Thailand for the longest time. I think still the big stadiums, like, they don't have women fight. Like, even though Muay Thai is their national sport, like, women don't necessarily do it. I don't know if it's, like, what the scene is, but he was talking about that, and he's like, and now she's like, because, you know, the money over there, U.S. dollars go a long way over there, and he was saying that, you know, she grew up doing the sport that, like, women didn't really necessarily usually do, and now she's, like, buying property and has, like, a ranch and, like, multiple homes and multiple pieces of land, and pretty cool. So she likes to go out there and perform. That should be an intriguing mixed martial arts fight. Roberto Soljic and Sebastian Katisam is the fight that everybody thinks is just going to be fireworks. I mean, these two dudes, I think both of them are at, like, an 86% knockout rate. They like to come and throw down. And Sebastian, if you saw the quote that I had, he's not a big outspoken dude, a loud verbal talker, but I loved what he said. He was like, somebody's getting knocked out, and I don't care who it is. He's like, somebody's going to sleep, and I don't care who it is. I'm coming out to put on a show. I thought that was cool. And I think he means it, too. Roberto Soljic, of course, the former KSW champ, highly touted. The debut was spoiled, but with the low blow. I think somebody asked, I just see this somewhere that, like, somebody asked him, like, well, if there were lessons he could take out of that fight, and he was like, wear a steel cup. I think that's hilarious. At least he can have good spirits about it. Sage Northcutt, I'm so excited to see Sage Northcutt back. He's facing Ahmed Mustafa. I did a story for Sports Illustrated about Sage Northcutt. I talked to him. Sage is just the most positive human being ever. I ran into him here in the lobby when I first got here, and he was so nice, you know, comes up. He's just that ball of positive energy, man. Like, it's so good. You know, I was asking him, you know, I was talking to him about the 4 years away, and he was talking about how he remained positive, and I was kind of joking with him. I was like, somehow I knew, you know, that you would have a positive spin on these things. He's like, well, you know, I get those negative thoughts too, but you just got to push them out, and you can't let those things control you. And I don't know, man. What he's battled back from is cool. You know, obviously his, you know, facial fractures in his debut, which he admits. Which I'll be honest with you, I never understood that matchmaking. Cosmo Alexander, dude, like, that was I never did understand what the logic was there with the matchup. And it did not pay dividends for Sage. Had the facial fractures, surgery. But he said even the next day, he was like, because I thought, man, something like that. You start questioning, like, why am I doing this? And he was like, nope, I knew I wanted to do it. I knew I was going to compete. You know, I knew I was going to make my way back. And he you know, he battled back, and he was supposed to fight 2 years ago, and then he got COVID. And he said the COVID messed him up. He's like, he thinks what happened was he tried to keep training because he said he doesn't really like to, like, not do anything. So he tried to keep training. He's pretty sure that, like, that's what caused complications. But he said it took him, like, 6 months to get normal again. So, you know, obviously COVID hits everybody different or had different effects on everybody. And I guess his case was pretty bad. So he said that was tough. But he's back now. He's back. And I'm you know, you think about it now. He was a baby when he came in, man. He was 19 years old, man. He was 19 years old and did pretty good. He was 6-2 in the UFC. But, you know, ultimately the UFC said, let's get this guy some more seasoning somewhere else. And rather than go to the regional stage, he went to one championship. And it is why, like, you know, I look at, like, a Raul Ruiz Jr. and why I just say, like, it's just hard, man. It's just hard to be at the highest level of the sport that young. But now he's had 4 years to train. You know, he's in his late 20s now. Like, now he's kind of entering his athletic prime. I think the dude was always in his athletic prime. But, you know, it's like maybe Sage can – you know, this feels like a big moment, like a big win here, man. And this, you know, the kid obviously has the look. And, again, he's just got the best attitude, man. And who knows how good he's gotten in his 4 years. He said he trained the whole time, you know. So how much has he improved and how much has he, trained and bettered himself? So – I'm excited to sing that one. Online song, Fanrong, middleweight MMA matchup there. Should be fun. Tai Ruotolo is back. Again, you talk about the best grapplers on the planet. Him and his twin brother are two of the legit best on the planet against Rainier de Ritter, who is a mixed martial artist who's best known for his grappling capabilities. But this is tough, man, when you go against the pure grapplers. It really is. So. Anyway, it's going to be a fun card. It starts at, I should probably know that, huh? Starts at 7 p.m. Eastern on Friday night. So it should be a fun card. I do think if you haven't been checking out ONE Championship, I think this is a card to do it. Again, it's that prime time. You get to see it. It's from Colorado. So this will be a big moment for them to step into the spotlight. So absolutely looking forward to that and have enjoyed being out here. Like I said, I will get to see the weigh-ins in the morning, so I'll see how that whole process goes. Then they do ceremonials afterwards, kind of, you know, the big face-offs and all that. But I mean, like I said, I've seen it on the stream. You know, they come in, they give a sample, they test the hydration. You know, I don't know. It's not like a, you know, it's not like a big deal in terms of like the presentation or whatever. It's just, you know, I'll jump on a scale and hand me some pee. but I'm just anxious to see it up front and to see it up close, I should say. Just kind of see the athletes. You know, again, there you just see like a little part of the stage, which not that they're hiding anything, but it's the same way with me. When I have official weigh-ins going, I just have a lockdown camera and I leave it running. So I'm kind of anxious to see that. You can watch those stream, by the way. They do stream those. Like I said, I think they're improving their transparency there and trying to do this. And look, I do want to say this because I, you know, I saw a lot of people blasting ONE Championship after that On Point MMA video came out, and I think On Point, you know, what they did is good in terms of educating and saying, hey, I mean, it is weird, right? Because even the doctor that was involved there, he's like, well, you know, I'm gonna tell people how to cheat the system. Like, you do kind of wonder, like, is that a good thing? But I think it's good to just be like, hey, look, here's how it's done. But I don't think that should take away from ONE Championship, at least trying. You know, like I said, from everything I've ever heard, they're trying to do it for the right reasons. Like I said, Alex Davis, good friend of mine and somebody who wants nothing but the best for the sport. And he loves it, man. He thinks it's amazing for the athletes. And he's got, you know, a handful of athletes in ONE. He's made the trip over to several events and has seen it up close and personal from the inside. You know what I mean? And if he thought there was anything untoward happening towards his fighter with the other, you know, the other athlete, he would say it, man. Like, he will step up and say it. He loves it. He absolutely loves it. So I just think that I think you have to at least reward them for trying something. I know ONE Championship, some of their decisions and the way they present things, and, you know, we just talked about some of the stuff that Chatry says and whatever. Like, I get it why you say, I don't like this, but I think if people are trying to do something, you should applaud them for trying to do something. Because, again, I have been in the sport for a long time, and I've yet to hear the perfect solution for it. So we shall see. All right, listen, let's take it out to Las Vegas. Let the man Cole Coffee check in. I know that he was eyeballing everything today and helping video edit and listening in to the all the best stuff happening at media. So since I haven't seen any of it, we'll kick it over to him and let you share, let Cole Coffee share a little bit of what he saw and talk about UFC 288 briefly Yeah, we got you covered everywhere. That's what we do on the MMA Roadshow.
You thought I was alone. You thought it was just me. John, I wasn't ready for this, but you caught me at a time I wasn't ready, but I'm not alone, so I'm going to hand it over to the man, the myth, the legend.
You thought he was dead, but he's back in your life. He's got the earballs and the eyeballs of a giant tortoise. He's the legend. He's the man. UFC thought they could get rid of him, but he's back again because he's Fiasco Jones.
If there was ever a WWE.
It's a new league.
It's a whole new league. That's like a weapon of whack destruction. WWG.
Better not to think about it.
Yeah. It is. Jones. Thank you, John, for the handoff. And yes, it would have or probably should have been myself alone, but I decided, since I was out with the one and the only Fiasco Jones, as you could hear by that intro, and the fans. The people, whether you knew you wanted this, you wanted this.
It's like herpes, people.
Whether you wanted to get rid of it, but you couldn't, here it
back.
Is.
It's back again.
You know that itch that just can't go away and you just got to keep scratching?
Fire.
That stinging fire. That stinky inky that just doesn't go away. It's Fiasco Jones.
That's right, people. Guess what?
All right, dude.
There is no cure.
Here we are in Las Vegas. And the best thing is, I know that while your time away from the UFC, and you know what's funny? We had a third person out with us tonight, and I will not name him because we want to keep him employed.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Don't make the same mistakes.
Yeah, we asked him if he wanted to join us for this taping, and he said, clearly, I'm pretty sure his words were, no, I don't want to get fired like you did.
He's much smarter than me. I'll give him tons of credit. Like he heard the setup, and he's like, no, he's the fish in the pond that sees the bait and is like, no, asshole, don't you see the hook? And he swam away. He swam away to UFC again.
But when you think about it, well, before we even talk about it, I know you guys, John brought us on here to actually talk about 288, but the fans really want to know.
Yeah, of course they do.
Are you glad? Or are you sad that you did the show that eventually got you kicked off?
I have had time, Kenny, Cold Coffee, to think about this. And there are many things I could say about the UFC that I didn't like. But I'm actually going to be I have to admit, they did build me up. I have no ill will.
Yep. Okay.
I learned lots of skills from the UFC. And I'm in a better place. So, bygones be bygones, right? That's how it is.
Who is this guy?
I have no ill will.
Who is this guy?
I will say, by the time they decide to fire me, I was already like thinking I need to leave.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like it really was the right time. And for anyone who cares, I actually landed in a better place. So
that's good.
I'm much happier where I'm at now. It's not MMA anything.
Yeah.
But still, I
don't want to say the name of the company because I don't want to get you fired
for
the new company.
It's not a competition here.
But I will say, the company that you're working for, what's funny is anybody that goes on Facebook.
You've seen me.
You guys, well, one, you probably in spots for this company, or this company does spots that run on Facebook.
Yeah.
A lot. And I remember there was randomly one time one of our buddies, Joe Williams from the UFC, hit me up and he said, is that Albert? And he sent me a message that was on that had a video link from a video on Facebook. It was you.
It was. In fact, the audio guy at UFC, we shop at the same Albertsons. And he's like, dude, just saw you on my Facebook. Like, I apologize. Here's the thing. Not to brag, but, I'm a bit of a specimen. And
it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
And apparently, according to the metrics and the media buying team, any ad that my face is in is the most converting ad that the company has.
Whoa.
Yeah, in fact,
people resonate when they see you. They see themselves.
They see ground zero. They see like the bottom, and they're like, "That's I resonate with that. I see the bottom. I can see that's me. That's my shadow." And it convinces them to buy the product. And I'm helping people at this point. You know, like at the UFC, I was just another cog in the wheel.
Yes.
I'm now helping people, you know? You know, now this ugly visage can remind people that there's another way.
Yes.
You know?
And yes, preach, brother.
Yeah,
preach.
That's what I'm doing. That's what I'm doing. I wish I could tell what the product was, but then
then I get fired again.
Yeah, and then I get fired again.
We won't say that, but I'm glad that you're happy. Mm-hmm. I know for a long time Morgan was kicking himself, and I blame Morgan too because he was the one
it's more Morgan than me. It's more Morgan than me either. It's like I had no participation. I was forced to do that podcast. Like I remember
we dragged you in and tied you down and said you must speak about these things.
It was 100% your guys' fault. It had nothing to do with me.
For the first 4.5 years, we were like, never, let's not tie him down. But once we crossed the 5-year mark of you doing the show, we were like, all right, let's tie him down. And
I was converting for you guys too. Like, you know, I mean, most of your Patreon people are Fiasco Gym fans. Yeah, and they've been waiting for this moment right now. Yeah. Like you've been holding them on tenterhooks.
Yeah.
When's Fiasco Jones coming back? And it's now. It's right now. You've paid dearly for this one.
for those that maybe possibly aren't one of those, Fiasco Jones was a longtime coworker of mine at the UFC. Made the mistake of doing the podcast with us for years until it got to the point where it got
until
him fired.
The right person heard it.
Yeah.
The wrong or right person heard it.
And they did not like the fact that he talked to, quote unquote, as I'm doing air quotes, media without their permission, even though that was never even a thing before.
Right.
But they chose to be mad at him for hanging out with us.
Yeah, I think it was because I said that I, for years, and the truth is, folks, for the longtime listeners,
we'll get to 288 after this, by the way. I mean, UFC 288.
You're not here for that. You're not here for that. You're here for the you're catching
Fiasco. Fiasco Jones.
The tea. You're here for the tea, as the kids say. I don't think even people say like the tea anymore. I think that's
what the fuck is the tea?
When you're spilling the beans. We call it spilling the beans. No, but now they say it's the tea or some version of that. I'm not fluent in kid. So
I feel like you're like the old man that walked into the bathroom. You saw something scribbled on the wall, and you're like, "Is that what I'm supposed to say?" I'm gonna go tell my coworkers.
Instantly, just simply said, "I'm gonna adopt this phraseology." And it's the tea.
Okay, it's the tea. Okay,
which we would call spilling the beans.
Which doesn't make any fucking sense either.
It doesn't. I thought the same thing. This is a bit of a tangent, but like I don't think it's a good phrase for telling people rumors, is spilling the tea. Unless there's been an epidemic of people spilling tea and then just simply confessing.
Well, I remember in Harry Potter, they like looked into like that, the tea or like that little cup that had like tea or coffee in it. And then like they were able to like see like things.
I definitely feel like we're losing subscribers. I have no vested interest.
Folks, thank you very much for the time that you decided to listen to the show before we got
You're never getting it back, folks. You're never getting it back. That's mine. It's part of a dark ritual. It's of stealing your time.
All right, well, you're right. Let's finish whatever the tea is, and then we'll get to the 288.
Here's the thing. I forgot what we were talking about. Just like our subscribers
did. Oh, folks, thanks for listening. We're going to hand it back to John because we're idiots over here. Well, dude. Well, I'm glad that you're here, and thank you for the tea wisdom that we didn't get.
That was appreciative. It'll come back eventually.
It was appreciative. Well, here we are, UFC 288, and it's funny. I know you've been out of the game for a minute, and it's funny. If I asked you that if there was a fight going on this weekend, would you have known?
No, not specifically. No, definitely not. Yeah.
But what's awesome about this fight is the two people that are main event. You know these guys, and you've seen them well. Aljamain Sterling and Henry Cejudo.
Yes, I'm actually with the other coworker we were out with tonight.
Who we will keep employed for his own preservation.
Yeah, he gave me when I heard like Aljamain was actually, you know, headlining, I had to say, okay, wait a second, where's he at right now? What's the backstory? Because when I left, Aljamain, I think barely
He was not the same.
No, he had it was against Peter Yan, and yep. he had essentially gotten the title because of a
the foul
disqualification.
So you were still with him at that point?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
And there was a lot of questions in the air about does Aljamain actually have it?
Remember, there was that whole scene at the very end where he's like, no, I don't want the belt. I don't want the belt. And then they put it on. He's like, okay, I'll take that. But no.
Yeah, no, because it was the idea of like you're winning it from a disqualification. That's where I left Aljamain Sterling.
But you had to watch. You couldn't have still been there at that point because that was.
No, I was there. Yeah, I was there for that.
2021? January, February, March 6, 2021 is the illegal knee that he won.
Okay, I wasn't there for that.
I was going to say, I was looking at the timer. I was like, you probably thought you were. There was a cancel bout that was supposed to happen at 12-12-2020. But the last time that he fought before that was June 6, 2020. When did you leave?
It was 2020. I think August.
Well, okay, so you probably saw him fight Sanhagen. But then.
I swear, it's weird. I actually have like a memory of like.
That might have been when you still actually watched the sport.
I mean, right after I didn't watch the sport. That was a bit of a sore spot.
Well, you lived and breathed it. Well, and for the folks that don't know, before Albert was at UFC, you were with them when it was WEC as well.
Well,
right?
They owned the WEC.
Right,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Did you do some work with them? Or?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Because I remember you used to have like WEC gear, which I was jealous of that, because I remember your camera case had a WEC sticker mm-hmm. on it and other stuff, yep. and I was like, okay, this dude's old school.
That's right. That's why I put it there, so you know. So
I know.
You fucking,
made me jealous.
I was virtue signaling.
You were virtue signaling.
You
well, I'm glad
shit.
I got you fired, motherfucker. I mean, I'm glad Morgan got you fired.
That's right, it's Morgan's fault. Fuck that guy.
But, no, well, it's funny. I feel like we could reminisce about the old days too, because I remember when I first came on, there was the crew that came over from WC, and then there was the Strike Force folks, but that was like a badge of pride, you know, the people that came in that were like, oh, I'm old school Strike Force, or I'm old school.
UFC didn't own Strike Force very long. There was a handful of shows where guys were like, oh, I'm going to Strike Force shows, and they're like, it was like six shows, like that's it. Sour grapes.
I was gonna say
I never went to a Strike Force show.
Didn't sound sour grapes at all, right there.
Fuck those guys.
What the f just happened? All right, I didn't realize that was a trigger spot. I like it.
I mean, I wanted to cross off all the boxes, you know, if I could, and I never got a Strike Force box. Yeah. But I had a ton of. I want credibility for. Tons of WEC. I was there for the Henderson, Pettis, Matrix
the Showtime kick.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was there for that. That was the last.
Do you remember when that happened? Did you guys think? I mean, I'm sure it was crazy, but did you guys think that you saw something that you were just like, I can't
absolutely.
Believe?
Absolutely. In the moment that we saw it, it was like, okay, that's amazing. But here's the catch. I actually have footage from the UFC when I was shooting behind the scenes for Henderson at. Goddamn! What I can't remember his gym at the time, but his gym in Arizona. We went down there and he was it wasn't Henderson. It was Pettis. There was footage of him actually practicing the Showtime kick, like jumping off the wall and doing this kind of spinning kick.
Oh, it's because Benson was at MMA Lab, but was he still at Rufus's gym?
It would have been
up in Milwaukee.
I couldn't have seen it at because I don't think I ever traveled to Rufus's lab or Rufus's place.
Rufus gym.
But there's footage of Pettis actually practicing the Showtime kick, and maybe that's what I'm thinking of is that like I've seen the B-roll, the backstage stuff of him practicing it. So when he actually like executed it, it looks amazing. But like
that would have been WC 53. Henderson versus Pettis?
Yeah.
December 16, 2010. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
It was in Arizona, wasn't it?
Glendale, Arizona.
Yeah. It was the last show, and it was like it ended like on a. I mean, you cannot end a fight company on a better note than that. Pettis loses the Benson loses the belt, and he was a dominant fighter at that point, a dominant champion. And then, you know, Pettis had been coming up. That that story of Pettis in the WEC coming up was pretty amazing because he was this like wunderkind, just destroying people, and he had these kind of Anderson Silva-esque wins where he was just very flashy, and then for him to win that way was just like ice, like cherry on top. It was amazing.
Yeah, Benson, I just looked back under his record. He was on a 5-win streak going in there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, he had beat, right before that, before he lost to Pettis, he beat Anthony Njokiwani, Shane Roller, Donald Cerrone, Jamie Vonner, and Donald Cerrone a second time.
Yeah. He fought Cerrone twice, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right before that. Beat Cerrone by guillotine choke and by
unanimous decision. And Cerrone was no, like, I mean, I can talk about Cerrone all the time. He probably is my favorite fighter.
Yeah, I think he's pretty much JMO's. Outside of Arlovski, I think Cerrone's JMO's.
I feel like Cerrone embodies what everyone thinks of as he's the archetypical fighter. He fights at the time when in his prime. He was fighting crazy. He was hard. He was a hard guy. He won most of his fights, but he never had a shitty fight. He never had a shitty fight in his entire life. But then he would just go on his off time, and he would just live this adventurous life.
Yep.
That's what people think MMA fighters are like. He is the archetypal
adrenaline, 100%, 24/7.
There's no, he never like puts his takes his foot off the pedal.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate that of him. The thing, the weird downside of him is that he can never close the deal, and that's why I think for centuries we will wonder about Cerrone. Why is that? Yeah. Like, why couldn't he? He should be a champion. Cerrone should be like one of the most decorated champions in MMA history, but he has never been a champion. But he is, I think, the archetypical fighter. Like what we think about of as the what you embody a fighter to be.
Right. What would you think when Cerrone? I don't know. I'm sure you saw this, but whatever. But speaking of that, you know, for the longest time, Cerrone, outside of like WC and other stuff, didn't get the belt, and people are like, is he ever going to make it to the Hall of Fame? So what did you think when Cerrone got the nod to get into the Hall of Fame for this year?
Absolutely natural. I mean, like,
and how, but how fucking cool is that? But it also sets up, it opens up a big doorway. You know, a lot of people thought like it almost seemed like you had to get a title, you had to have some crazy blood, you know, we all your blood comes out of your body fight, you know, to get into the Hall of Fame. But he opened up the doorway as well, you know, to kind of like a fan favorite, like the first fan favorite that I could think of that they found a way to sort of work in there, you know?
Right. And there needs to be a pathway for that, because I think like Joe Lozon needs a pathway, you know? Like,
that's a good name. I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah. Matt, oh, God damn, I forgot his name. But either way, there's tons of people. Who's the welterweight? Matt, you went to in Ohio or
Hamill?
No. Welterweight.
Oh, you're talking about Matt
Brown.
Yeah, I was like
Matt Brown deserves a place, you know?
I like that. Because I love Matt Brown, but you're right. I mean,
Matt Brown deserves a place. People who that were fan favorites, that actually they drew a crowd based on their fighting skill, not necessarily the gold or the
overall record or the overall achievements.
The overall achievements. But and, I mean, there are some fighters that like have like winning records that don't deserve to ever go there. But you have people like Joe Lozon who gave the fans exactly what they wanted. When a fan bought a ticket and they went to a fight, Joe Lozon paid that ticket. You know, and so did Cerrone, and so did Matt Brown, and so did so many others. They paid. I'm thinking of another guy, the short guy that's also a welterweight. God damn it, I think he's also named
Hendricks.
No, Hendricks was good. I can't remember. I've lost so many. There's so many fighters, but like
so many brand sales have been lost over the years.
Exactly, but there are so many people out there that obviously need to be in the Hall of Fame that didn't necessarily win the accolade or the awards. That it can't just all be champions, because if you're an MMA fan, you know that most of the guys you loved in MMA were not champions. They were just those guys who were gritty. They were those guys who essentially paid the ticket. You paid a ticket to see 12 guys fight, but you really the one that got that they gave you the best fight are those guys who scrapped, you know, that just never gave an inch. They were fighting every round. Those are the guys that really deserve a spot in the Hall of Fame.
I wonder who it could be, because like I was like, Matt Hughes is already in there.
Is it a lightweight? Maybe a lightweight.
Wait, Matt? Well, if you start switching up your lightweights now or your weight classes, I don't even.
I'm not even on my phone.
Who knows? Who knows? But I guess we should talk about what we were talking about.
Yeah.
But that's the great thing. That's why we need to bring you back on the show after, because I know you have a tons of stories that we haven't talked about in forever. But you make me want to reminisce about like all the old school days and the other shit, like my first event at the UFC and all this other crazy crap. But jumping back to Aljamain Sterling and Henry Cejudo, which I know you're familiar as well. Here comes Cejudo, who's been gone forever.
Yeah.
He's coming back in. Somehow works his way into taking comeback.
This is UFC magic.
And get
right
into it, get a title fight. I mean, I guess that's part of the whole UFC thing, is like if you have some credibility, you have some name value, and you're able to kind of work your talk in there. But I mean, granted, this is not just anybody. This is not just a shit talker that's coming in. This is a guy that legit Triple C, double champ, you know, the guy that's able to kind of do this. And I don't know if you knew this, he was also an Olympian.
Mm.
Yeah. He actually got medals.
What?
Actually got medals.
Wow,
I don't know if you knew that.
No, that's
but here he is coming back. I mean, so you got both guys. You got both guys that have great wrestling skills. They got good grappling skills. If anything else, I mean, I think we realize that Cejudo has gotten better with his striking, but everybody still considers him, you know, mainly a guy that wrestles. Aljamain Sterling, great grappling. He's good on the ground, but people, I guess, you know, you want to say out of the two has better striking of the two. But, you know, what's interesting is a lot of people say, oh, well, you know, Aljamain's got great grappling. He's got good ground skills. He can help defend a takedown. But does he have the skills to stop an Olympic-like wrestler? You know, he's had problem with guys in the past. Peter Yan even gave him some hard fits that first time around. But when they came back for the rematch, it was a whole different Aljamain Sterling. So when you think of this fight, here comes Henry coming back, Henry being Henry, Aljo being the guy that, you know, you've seen great striking, you've seen good ground skills. He's a fucking beast for that size, too. At bantamweight, he is absolutely ginormous. I mean, the guy is ready to go up to 45. But when your initial thoughts, when you heard that this fight had came back, or that this fight worked itself out, Henry came back and everything, what were your initial thoughts on the fight?
I can't believe it's not going to be the most unique take, but I believe the words ring rust are probably...
Ask Dominic Cruz, who says it doesn't exist, but it exists.
It exists. It's a real thing. And Peter Yan, let's go back to Peter Yan. That guy is insane. Like, right. I mean, that Aljamain was able to defeat him. I mean, the first fight.
First time didn't look great.
Yeah.
Second time, he dominated him.
Right.
Yeah.
That's an achievement. To me, and he's still in the game. Like, I mean, ring rust is the story.
Right.
And I'm sure this is not unique. This is not like, woo. And I get it. But I feel like that honestly is the top line, is that Cejudo has been out for a long ass time.
Right.
And it matters. That fucking matters to not be fighting human beings for that amount of time is, I mean, that's the entire story.
Yeah. And what's interesting, I mean, he's been coaching, he's been training,
not
but you're right. But
thing.
But fight speed is different than that. You know, I mean, I think there's definitely some credibility to the fact of being able to, you know, understand the science of the sport, really breaking down when you're coaching somebody and you're looking at the mistakes. I'm sure in that process you're thinking about your own mistakes, the way you or your own movements, and you're hoping to sharpen that sort of thing. But it's very different than actually taking punches, putting your heart rate at a certain level, you know. But you got to think, if a guy, you know, and this is something that we give too many guys you know, credit when they're at this level. When I think of an Olympian, I immediately, I'm putting them, if I'm equating fighters to liquor and drinks, if I hear an Olympian, that's top shelf. That's just not on the same level as, like, it's going to be above the well. I think anybody, like a fighter that's able to get a championship belt,
it's a bad metaphor.
That's not well.
It's a bad metaphor because is that, like, when you age alcohol, it gets better, right? But it just sits
some,
there.
If I age my PBR, does it get better?
Maybe potentially, but probably not. But like, mostly the metaphor is like wine. The longer you sit, it sits there, it gets more potent, but better.
Yeah.
I don't think that works with fighting. Not at all. And I'm not discrediting Cejudo for all of his achievements, but the fact that you're, like you said, like being in there against a person month after month after month, year after year after year, it means something. It means something. And even just analyzing people, like, are we better fighters because we've seen fights? No.
Oh, we're very much so. Very much so.
I mean, I've won a few fights.
He's like, but I can't tell. Those are still locked away in some top secrets.
Avoid some chokes. Because of this. It's not the same thing at all. Yeah, can he coach guys? Absolutely. I'm sure he has. He's a fount of wisdom. But it's not the same thing as actually like fighting a guy, training for a fight, and getting ready for, and actually having that the momentum of coming from a fight, going into training, you know, after the fight, going back into training, and preparing for a fight. I don't think that he's not like an average guy that, or average fighter, middle tier fighter that is going to have the same things to overcome. He's definitely at a higher level. You're right. Yes, like an aged wine. He's not going to have to overcome the same difficulties as other fighters.
Yeah,
but he still has to overcome these issues. And Aljamain is already there. He's already a well fueled machine. He's ready for takeoff, and he's waiting. That countdown is just tick 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 tick. That's all he's waiting for. All he needs is like, all right, launch, and he's gonna fight. Whereas Cejudo is like, oh God, Jesus Christ, is the sealant here cooled? Oh God, is this thing over here? This is bulging out. That's not supposed to happen. And some folks are like, well, let's scrub the launch, but they have to launch anyway. There's no if or ands or buts. It's like you gotta get out there in the goddamn octagon and fight Aljamain Sterling.
Do you think he's gonna come in overconfident? Because I think every
Cejudo always comes out overconfident.
Right.
So.
But you figure that's part of what his best attributes as well is the belief in himself. I think every fighter needed to go in there believing in himself. And I think it's that belief in himself that took him to the Olympic level. But I mean, like, this guy coming in, that's got to be said.
That's got to be worth something. Has
probably
peak confidence in himself.
Yeah.
And he still lost. So it does take you, you're right. Absolutely. It takes you. That confidence in yourself takes you to a certain level. It's not going to win you fucking fights.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, Conor McGregor would be champion of the day. Yeah. He'd be the best fighter in the world.
So speaking of the confidence, one of the things that Henry said, he's already kind of looking towards the future, but his goal was he wants to beat Aljamain, and he said this at the presser, or at the media day. His plan is to get Aljamain. And then the next guy that seems to be on the ticking, on the table, that's been jawing and chomping at the bit is Sean O'Malley. He wants to take care of – he's got some real sort of hatred towards Sean O'Malley. I think he called him a crazy crackhead eraser head or something. So I'm butchering what said,
damn,
but it was something
eraser
along
head.
Those
that's
lines.
That's a tough film.
And then he wants Volkanovski after that, which means he would have to go up. But he wants Volkanovski. He wants to be the quadruple champ. Of course he does. You know, triple C is just not enough. He wants to go up and get another belt. Is that just confidence? Is that just, you know, talking the game? Is he setting himself up? A lot of times when we hear fighters already talk about the future, looking past an opponent, is he already setting himself up to, here he is, he hasn't fought forever, but now he wants to come back. He's going to be fighting the champ. He was able to work himself into a title shot. He wants to fight Aljamain, but he's already thinking about Sean O'Malley. He's already thinking about Alexander Volkanovski even outside of that. Is he looking past Aljo? And what do you think about a guy that's coming into media and that's the kind of stuff that he's talking about?
I would ask the question, who is Aljamain talking about fighting next? Is he thinking about fighting anyone next?
Well, he did say that if Sean O'Malley was the fight that they wanted to, the unique thing about him and some of the stuff that he was talking about, if Sean O'Malley is the fight that makes sense and he thinks that that's the biggest one, Aljamain's always been a company guy. So he's like, if that's what the UFC think is going to be the biggest fight to make the most money and bring the most eyeballs, I'm good with it. You know, and wants to do whatever. But he also understands that this weight cut sucks. He even said it in the media. He's like, this weight cut absolutely sucks. But he also has a teammate and Mirab Davalishvili, who's right there behind him. And a lot of people, you know, they've said that they didn't want to fight each other. So a lot of people are thinking, looking at this fight here, that if he's able to maintain the belt, if he gets the belt, then it's maybe one more shot, which would be this Sean O'Malley fight, and then he wants to leave it and then go up to fight again because he's already big for bantamweight. He's very, very big. But if he loses this fight, that's where a lot of people question whether he's going to stay at that or do you immediately just make that decision? I can see where he doesn't want to – why stay at the division if he loses the belt? You know, just make the move.
Right.
But part of it is the possibility of his buddy, his teammate, who's right there. If he wins this fight, if he doesn't fight Sean O'Malley, it's almost like the UFC is like – because they've said Marab's like, I don't want to fight him, but there's nobody else besides him.
Yeah.
You know? So it's interesting in that sense, but if you hear sort of that deal and Aljamain side, not that it's like there's no like no win situation, but he's already kind of coming in this fight week as well. Like, you know, I just like saying he wants to go out there and perform. He's given a lot of respect to Cejudo. Cejudo, outside of all the cringy, wacky shit that he does, you got to give him his props. You got to give him his respect for what he's done before. But what he's done, I mean, when he beat DJ, how can anybody doubt what the dudes did when he went in there and beat DJ? DJ was the dude. He was the guy when people are talking about pound for pound greatest. You know, when people are talking about John Jones and other stuff, they were talking about DJ. And then this guy went in there and beat him. So when you look at Aljo, I mean, I guess when you think about what's next and you think about what he's, you know, looking in this fight, and I love that the cats. What my cat's trying to attack Fiasco right now.
He's little love bites.
Yeah.
Now, to answer your question, though, I think let's just not be stupid about it. Is that ring rust is a real thing? Cejudo's a great fighter, but he hasn't been there. And for him to be naming off his next competition, I feel like it's a sign of weakness. It's a sign of that, like, he's trying to distract from, I have a huge fight in front of me right now. Let's talk about the fights after this. That is weak, in my opinion. Is that, like, don't measure the drapes. Don't plan your future past now, because
it's like you're just spitting in the MMA god's face because they're always listening.
Absolutely. And that, I mean, what I love about MMA is that no matter what I say, he has a shot. Like, everyone that goes in there has an equal shot and shit happens. But I'm going to say that Aljamain, he's giving deference to Cejudo's career and his accolades and his pedigree. But even he probably knows is that, like, goddamn, like, I've been here. I feel a little more fresh. And in his head, he's probably thinking this is, like, great. And, of course, he's looking at – if you ask him about Sean O'Malley, I would love to see that fight. He probably is looking forward more to that fight than he is to Cejudo. Cejudo at this point is a money fight. He's a name. He's coming out of nowhere. But he's not coming in from because he won that spot.
Yeah.
He's coming in because
of his name.
Right. And relationships.
It's the biggest
and,
money fight option.
Right. And it's because the UFC knows that the people will pay for this card.
Yeah.
And so Aljamain is making a money play. Smart for him, smart for Cejudo, but I don't think Cejudo's walking away with this. But if it sets up for Sean O'Malley, honestly, I love that idea. I love that idea.
When you say you don't think he's walking away, you mean not fighting again, or you don't think he's walking away with the belt? I guess I can segue to that, and you can answer, I guess, both questions. Explain what you said, but what is it? I guess because we've already ran way too long. Sorry, John.
Whatever.
What is your prediction on this fight?
I think Aljamain walks away with it. I think it's going to be a hard-ish fight. Probably three rounds. I'm going to say three rounds.
Really? So you're saying he finishes him?
Yeah, I think Aljamain's finishes him.
Striking?
I believe no, I think it's probably going to be ground. I think it's going to be some kind of submission. I do think that Cejudo, as strong as he is, will eventually gas. And not gas. It's just that it's a five-round fight in the UFC is probably the hardest thing any human being has ever done in their life. And if you have stepped out of that for several years, you think you're ready. And Cejudo's done it. Like, the thing, Cejudo, his confidence is through the roof. He's like, I've done this before. It's not the same thing as just saying, okay, I'm going to take a few years off and then come back and do it. Immediately, like, not, you're not gonna even like ratchet up to like a few three rounds and then get to five. You're just gonna go from retired to five. No, and it's not, it just doesn't work out.
And it's not even just the rounds. You're going against the champ.
Yes, a guy who has done this again. And I guess Peter Yan, we all know, is not some. You know,
he's not a scrub.
He's not a scrub. Yeah, he's not just some random guy. That Peter Yan was supposed to be the heir apparent to that belt. For everyone that was in the bantamweight division said, Peter Yan is the next champion.
Yeah.
Aljamain Sterling beat him once. but still, he beat him.
Yeah.
That means something.
Yeah.
That means something. Cejudo has been out that entire time. I can't – I have to say that, like – Sterling has this, like he, and to say that Cejudo has a legitimate chance. Everyone has a legitimate chance in the octagon, but I guess statistically and like just like rationally, no, like he doesn't. Like he's, it's just like it's not the same thing. Like it's just he's in a different category.
Yeah,
he was the champ. He's not the champ. He left. You know, he had, I'm sure he got fat, he got skinny, got fat, got skinny, got fat, got skinny, got in fighting shape, and now he's like, let's go fight again. Not the same thing. It's not the same thing fighting someone who's like, I've been the champ now. I've defended my belt several times now. It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing.
And he's a specimen. Aljo's a specimen.
Right.
Well, there you go. I love that breakdown. It went way longer than I thought. And I would ask you about any other names. I mean, besides this, the co-main, Bilal Muhammad, Gilbert Burns. Do you have initial thoughts on how that fight's going to go?
No. Gilbert Burns. I'm going to say Gilbert Burns.
Yeah. Well, it was really good on the media day as well. Gilbert Burns jumped in this. There's a lot of – this guy's been chugging away, getting wins, you know, decided to jump in here and take this fight. He's willing to fight anybody. Bilal, same with him. You know, he's been clamoring, hoping for the fight. You know, the title, you know, they both agreed to take this fight. Bilal thinks if he gets a win here, he thinks with enough shine that he could take over that fight with Leon Edwards, skip over Colby Covington, maybe take that fight to Abu
Everyone
Dhabi.
Everyone wants to skip over Colby.
Everybody wants to skip over Colby, but, I mean, Dana seems to be
is
set.
Is that still a payday now, like fighting Colby? Yeah.
Well, Colby's able to come in, and he's got the shot against Leon Edwards as the title. Dana's like, Leon and Colby's the next fight, so... He's done
I would think you wouldn't want to skip a Colby Covington fight just because Colby sells
brings
fights.
It. He sells fights. As much as people want to talk shit or whatever, Colby sells the F out of some fights, man. Like, and he's a hell of a fighter, but he sells fights. And I mean, I think if a fighter wants to go in there and know that, you know, if you can bring up or drum up some heat during fight week with Colby, it's like a guarantee, right?
I feel like he sells himself and sells you.
Yes,
it's a win-win if you can beat him. He's not like a pushover. So
yeah, and I mean, I'm sure looking down the rest of this card, any other names that you're? I say that jokingly because I know he hasn't looked at the card.
By the way, folks, since I left or I was unceremoniously kicked out of the UFC, it has changed.
It has changed quite a bit.
There's a lot of names, cats, that I have. I'm like, wow, I am a boomer of the UFC.
You're official old timer.
I'm just glad that there's still some champs there that I recognize.
Yes, isn't that something?
The lightweight champ. It was Teixeira, right? And then Teixeira lost to.
Oh, you're talking light heavyweight.
Yeah, light heavyweight.
Oh, you said lightweight.
I'm sorry.
I was like, no.
Light heavyweight.
Glover ain't been lightweight for a minute.
He's never been lightweight. And I just saw that it changed a guy again. New guard. I have no idea who the light heavyweight champion is. I was like, wow, holy crap.
It's me. I'm actually the light heavyweight champion. And
I will say, though, like just as a tangent, is that I feel like I have now become a casual. Not even that. I'm not even a casual anymore. But I always go to MMA Junkie.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate that.
To catch up.
Morgan won't like that, but I appreciate that.
That's all right, Morgan. You got me fired anyway. But I'll go there, catch up, and I'll be like, wow, like more and more of my the people who are of my era are just don't exist anymore. And there's Chaos Williams. Is it Chaos Williams?
Yes.
I want to follow.
He's a badass too.
I want to follow Chaos Williams.
Just because it's Chaos.
Yes, absolutely. And
his fight style is Chaos. He's awesome. He's a fucking scary dude.
He's gonna be my new favorite. I'm glad that we're doing this because it's
bringing you back into the fold.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm shaking off your ring rust, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I feel like Cejudo. I feel like Cejudo. But that's why I'm losing, because everyone's like, you idiot. Why are you on this podcast? You don't know shit. I am the Cejudo of podcasting.
That's true.
Of MMA podcasting.
You're the original Triple C.
Yeah, exactly. I was gone for a minute. I was doing it. I was doing it. I was gone for a minute. And now I'm back, and I sound like an idiot.
Ooh.
He's back, motherfuckers.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be the greatest handoff, because just to peel the curtain back, John taped his segments, and I thought John was going to send me one segment. I'm out drinking with Fiasco Jones, and then John sends me the audio, and he's like, hey, can you tape a segment? And I said, this will be fun.
Can I just pause you right there to add to the fun? It would not be a Fiasco Jones segment if we did not delve into the mysteries of...
Oh my God!
The wider universe.
We've already been talking for 41 minutes. You got to be quick.
Matter. That doesn't matter. Did you know that?
Be quick.
Did you know that? At least last week.
Well, it was been great while we had you as listeners.
This is what they want. This is what they want. UFOs. They had a congressional congressional meeting about UFOs.
Okay.
And they came out and said that, guess what? Of all the UFO reports,
sightings or whatever.
Yeah,
okay.
Sightings.
Okay. Okay.
None of them are from the other planets. Do you believe that?
The sightings came from people in America saying that they were sightings?
They're saying that, like, yes, we have some unexplained sightings. There's been like 600-something sightings, but we can say that none of them are from outside of this planet.
You mean trace their origins from outside of the planet?
Right. They're saying there are no aliens.
So they came from the sea or something. I see. So they can't track any like entry points into like the solar, into like the our space.
They wouldn't go into that. They literally, actually, it's sad. It's good that we're going to close out the segment this way, because
now there's more questions.
It started out as a revelation. I'm like, oh, they're going to talk about UFOs, and then they immediately said there are no aliens, and then they talked about just the operations of like, oh, how do we test for UFOs and shit like that, and it came out to be China and Russia.
Yeah. That was a very depressing segment there.
I mean, I had to wrap it up. I felt a lot of pressure right there.
That's the ring rust right there just showed up. That's the ring rust. All right, so now we're going to hand it back to John, who thinks it's just me, but he didn't realize that we just went on a 42-minute tangent of MMA stuff. So thank you all for listening. We love you. I'm glad to be back here in Vegas, but now we're going to toss it back over to Morgan in Colorado.
All right, definitely appreciate Cold Coffee just giving us a little bit there. I know sometimes he'd probably prefer to just not have to say anything. I don't think he's as comfortable just talking by himself as I am, which even me, I think, yeah, what am I doing here? But I'm going to go check now and see if I'm stuck on the 22nd floor or if we actually have functioning elevators again, which hopefully we do. And we'll have full one championship coverage all week long. So take a look on social media for that. If you happen to be in Canada, Fight League Atlantic, check us out there. Always enjoy seeing fans out there. Everybody's been super nice to me. When we've been out there, we've had a good time. So happy to see anybody that's out there. Come say hello. Say what's up. Yeah, and appreciate everybody that supports us over at patreon.com/TheMMARoadshow. It means the world to us. So anybody that helps us, that listens to us, we appreciate you. But those people, that's the VIPs, and we really appreciate you. Know that. Lots of MMA action this weekend. Let's soak it all in. But more important than anything, thanks for listening.